saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole
world over. Oh my God. Okay. There's just so much crap going on. And then, you know, I get this new computer and I get all excited because I'm like, oh, we're going to get to record our first podcast on a decent computer. And then I, of course, you know, I try to get it to work and it's like, nope.
Just take a deep breath in for
yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Oh my God.
Shake it off.
All right. Okay, so we're back for another one.
Hey.
Yeah. Hey. This is Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night, and I'm Janine Mercer.
And I'm Mimi Steven.
Hi, Mimi. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Janine?
I'm stressed the fuck out. Oh my God. Computer stuff, and then, like, this week I have to do the class thing, and that's going to be like 2 weeks.
Right.
And then, you know, one of them is in Milwaukee, which is not terrible, but then the other one is in South Milwaukee, so I have to leave one job and go to the other job. Right. And like, so it's going to be like, you know, 10-hour days that I have right. to work. So it's just going to be, yeah, it's just going to be yeah. terrible. So I apologize formally on the podcast for making you come on Sunday instead of coming because we usually record on Thursday.
This really works out better for me anyway.
So
this week also is crazy because my sister's coming.
Oh, and good, good.
Multiple doctor's appointments towards the end of the week.
Your sister, the fan.
No, the other one.
Oh. Well, you need to convince this one to listen to it too.
Yeah, I don't think that'll ever happen.
Oh my. So some news. I am working on trying to develop some designs for some t-shirts.
Cool.
Because I would like to be able to have, like, some sort of merch, like coffee cups, t-shirts, that sort of thing, that we can sell. And, you know, then people can have, like, Hauntheads crap. And then when they're out, you know, milling around and doing their grocery shopping and whatever, people can be like, oh, what the fuck is that on your shirt? And you'll be like, I'm a Haunthead. And they'll be like, what the fuck is that? And then you could tell them all about us.
Oh, yeah, I love wearing sweatshirts.
So, yeah, so that would be really cool. So I'm looking at something called Represent, which I haven't done a lot of research into. And then I'm also looking at Cafe Press, because with Cafe Press, I know for sure that you can make, like, your own little shop. And people can go and just buy, yeah, out of your shop. At least you used to be able to do that. I don't know. The last time I looked was in, like, 2012.
I don't know anything about anything on the computer. Very old.
So the other option is to use something like Bonfire, which is a website where you set up, like, basically, like, you have, like, 19 days on a campaign. And you sell as many t-shirts as you can in those 19 days, but if you don't sell 11 t-shirts, then they don't get printed.
Okay.
So that's the only downside to it. And, you know, I don't know if we would sell 11 t-shirts.
Right.
Like, I really don't know. Maybe we would. I don't know. But that's kind of where I am on that. So we do have, you know, the regular spooky, creepy shit for this episode. To both, you know, creep out and titillate. But we also have some kind of flashback stuff from our journey here on Hauntheads. So I thought that we would go back through some of the old episodes and see what ones were our favorites and, you know, kind of discuss them a little bit. Let's see here. So my first one that I really enjoyed was season 1, episode 14, which was A Haunting of Hamilton Proportions. Mm-hmm. And it was the one where you, Mimi, talked about the hotel, was it? Mm-hmm. That yeah. the guy that wrote Hamilton went to.
Yes.
And the soldier falling down the stairs and dying versus going out in the battlefield and dying. That was, I thought that that was pretty funny. And I did spontaneous human combustion.
Yes.
Which is a topic that has fascinated me for a very, very long time. So I was so, so happy that I got to write about that and that I got to share it with you guys and share it with you.
And
it's very strange.
Pictures and stuff, it's like...
It's very strange.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's, and you know, like I said in that, that particular episode, you know, the guy that I talked about in the last, like, 10 or 15 minutes of that episode... He was just sitting on his sofa and was, like, getting ready to go fishing or something with one of his friends. And all of a sudden, he started smoldering. And it's like, where does that, like, how does that, it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just fascinating to me.
It's really strange. I mean, what, do you need to take Beano with
you? Take Beano before and there'll be no gas. But that's not flames, that's gas. But so you still need something to light it.
Starts it.
And yeah, what? Yeah. It really makes you think.
Or maybe you should eat baking soda every day.
Right?
I mean, you know.
Every morning after you brush your teeth, you should take a fire extinguisher and like... just to be safe. To walk through the mist.
There's no... You know, it's not like a genetic thing where it runs in families. We didn't find that.
Yeah, no. No, I don't think there was any genetic...
It's just so random.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe these people were kidnapped by aliens at some point.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then when they're naughty, they go...
Right? They just light on fire.
Sorry, guys, I'm in a strange mood.
Or that the strange moods are the best moods, in my opinion. That other story about the girl in, I think it was in England, and she was in bed. And she somehow spontaneously combusted during the night, and they found her, like, halfway between the bed and the cabinet or whatever. And there was a candle on the bedside table that was completely untouched. Like, not melted at all. The wick was not burnt. It was a brand new candle.
Right.
And she's just a smoldering pile of ash.
Right.
I believe it was just, like, a leg and a piece of an arm.
Yes. Yes. I remember.
And that was it. That was all that was left of her.
I'm a very visual learner.
Yeah, yeah, that was literally all that was left of her. So, I mean, you know, you sit back and you're like, okay, well, you know.
Why didn't it?
It just doesn't, nothing else in the room, you know, like the curtains were a little singed, but then we start talking about that human wick theory. And how, you know, there's enough fat in the body to burn for a certain amount of time, and then eventually it would burn out. But there's all this other flammable
and
shit around her.
It has to be so hot to make a body turn to ash.
Right, right. I mean, that's, even in cremation,
yeah, so
you don't, there are still, you know, chunks that
so
don't necessarily.
There's so many questions about it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Such a weird happening.
Yeah, because, you know, after you are deceased, and if you choose to be, you know, eviscerated. You want to be cremated. You they take your remains and they put them in a blender, and then they make them even finer because the process of cremation does not convert all of that bone, like all of those remains, to ash. You actually have to like grind it afterward.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So. And that's how people who do that get, if they're not careful, you can get white lung, which is similar to, like, coal miners getting black lung. Yeah, you can get white lung. You can also get bird keeper's lung, apparently, which is similar. Yeah, so you have to keep...
You
gotta watch the bird dander. Yeah. Well, my lungs already suck, so it's like, meh. Whatever, I'll get bird keeper's lung.
Well, when I die, they now do... You can make a glass globe... out of your ashes.
Oh.
So that's what I'm going to do. Each of my three kids are going to get a part of me. If
nice.
Bill wants me, he can have a part of me too. But I'm expecting him to go first.
Oh, you think he's going to go first? I don't know. I try not to think about it. Recently, we made the leap and got life insurance.
Okay.
And there's something about... I was saying to the insurance lady on the phone, I don't know if it's that... I'm becoming more mature, and like I realize that now there's certain shit that I have to take care of, because if something happens to me, God forbid, you know, that I have to make sure that Joanna's taken care of, and vice versa. Or if it's just that I've come to terms with my own mortality and that eventually I know I'm going to croak.
It's probably a little bit of both.
Yeah, so I don't know. But it's been really, like, it was really emotional for a little while. Like, she would ask me, like, well, how much, there's, like, some sort of insurance that, like, it's, like, the in-between time when you're grieving. So you lose somebody, and then you grieve, you grieve, you grieve, and then when you're ready, you go back to work. But you have, like, this buffer.
Right.
And so we're talking about this buffer, and I'm, like, getting teary-eyed and, like, thinking about this buffer time, and I'm like, oh, my God, okay. Can't, like, I don't want to think about it. Like, nobody wants to think about it, but, yeah.
Well,
so
you really can't plan it. It just
Well, and I mean, maybe we'll both go at the same time. Like, there could be something that happens, and we'll both go at the same. Like, who fucking knows?
Right.
You know. But so we decided that if we both go at the same time, then the money goes to her brother and her father, to be used for my niece and nephew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, they'll get like a full ride to college, and, you know, yeah. So they'll be taken care of, because we don't have kids, and we're probably never going to have kids, so that's fine.
Okay.
I don't want to share my toys anyway, so.
I know. That would be a huge problem.
It would be hard. I'd be like, no, don't take it out of the box.
You'd have to put a huge lock on the door.
Wipe your hands first. Yeah. No, it would be, yeah, it would be bad. Yeah. So that's one of my favorites. What's one of your favorites?
Well, the other one we were just talking about that I liked is the one where you did, and they're locked up, they're walled.
Oh, immurement. Yes.
How nuns would be immured.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the very pious. Mm-hmm.
Just thinking about that. I mean, they would feed them, but what would they do with their duties?
I honestly, I didn't even think of that.
Did they ever bathe?
I don't think that was a thing. I feel like they were just locked in there.
Horrible. Just horrible.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
I think the rooms just had a teeny tiny slit for light.
Mm-hmm.
If they were lucky.
Yep. There was usually a little slot for food. So I think I said very flat food, like pancakes.
Yeah.
They probably ate a lot of pancakes. And egg or waffles, and
bread and butter.
Yeah, bread. Yeah, probably bread. That's probably more realistic, because I think that this happened, you know, like when there were no Eggos.
Yeah.
So they probably weren't like, here's a fucking egg or waffle.
Which Eggos are one of my favorites.
I do love me some Eggos.
Yep.
Lego my Eggo. Yep.
And then I really, really, really enjoyed doing the one with. What's his name? The cannibal.
Joseph. Oh, Joseph Matheny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you got so grossed out.
The cannibal killer!
I never thought anything would gross you out.
I think that the name of that episode was LOL OMG BBQ WTF.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's see. Another one of my favorites. Was season 1, episode 6, The Brumder Mansion. We also talked about Black River Falls. The story about the Brumder Mansion and the history of the Brumder Mansion is very, I mean, it's very sordid, and there's a lot of it, you know. I mean, they used it for, you know, during Prohibition times, you know, mobsters used it.
Right.
It's, you know, it's got all this great history. And then on top of that, it's fucking haunted.
Right.
Which is just fantastic. It's like the best of both worlds.
Right. We're going to have to still work on getting in there.
We are. We're going to have to.
Bill, every once in a while, I want to get a room there.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's, it's got so much history, and there's so many people that have had experiences there.
Yeah.
So that'd be really interesting. Black River Falls, we talked about Black River Falls, Wisconsin, and how they had some very strange occurrences there. I forget the time frame, but it was, you know, way back when. And a lot of people came to Black River Falls because the land was so cheap, et cetera, et cetera. And once they got there, I sound a little bit like Willy Wonka just then, et cetera, et cetera. You will not take the everlasting gobstoppers and give them to Slugworth, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So, there was just a lot of strange shit that was going on. People randomly hanging themselves. This guy, this farmer who went out in the backyard one day and like stuck a shotgun in his mouth and shot himself. There was another guy that dug a hole and put some dynamite in it and then stuck his head in the hole and blew up the dynamite. Mm-hmm. very, very graphic. There was another one about a lady who had spent several years in various institutions, and she was big on breaking glass. So she would break, like, all the train station windows, and then she would go to the next town.
Didn't she also set fires?
No, I think it was glass. Yeah, I think it was glass. There was, I feel like there was a lady who set a fire or something because her husband was going to divorce her or something.
I think so.
I don't know. There was just so, so much there.
I wonder if they grew rye there. Because moldy rye, when they would...
You mentioned that in the episode, that moldy rye can cause people to hallucinate and get very sick. And I don't know. That would be something interesting to kind of research and figure out if they actually did. It wouldn't surprise me if they did.
Yeah.
Because it seems like, you know, if they could get it to grow there. Because apparently the land was ultra shitty and, like, wouldn't really grow much of anything. But yeah, so if you want to learn more about Black River Falls, Wisconsin Death Trip is on YouTube. You can watch the full like little movie. It's like a movie, and then it's like kind of faux documentary-ish stuff where they used actors to do reenactments of the things that are happening. And then there's also a narrator who is supposed to be the newspaper man who was in town at this present time and was recording all of these incidents. And then there's also a book that you can get on Amazon called Wisconsin Death Trip, and it has all the old photographs and stuff in it. So it's very cool. Okay, what about you?
Okay, the Annabelle story. It's not the story itself. It's that Zach, whatever his name is,
Baggins,
after we did the story, goes and touches it and makes fun of it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm still so angry about
I'm floored by that. I don't even
heard anything bad happening to him, and periodically I look up his name
to see if there's no obituary.
Yeah. Well, just to see if anything happened.
Right. Yeah.
You know? And then it just saddens me that he has, because you can't play with spirits and...
You know, something that struck me about the fact that he touched the Annabelle doll was he has a museum of creepy shit and, like, supposedly haunted shit. And he doesn't approach things like that in that show that he does, where he talks about his museum. I don't know what it's called. But it's specifically a show where he, like, calls people in and they come in with, like, their haunted objects and they leave them with him.
Right.
Because they don't
and
want...
And they sit and they talk. Like,
yeah. And because they don't want the burden anymore.
Yes.
And so, you know, I mean, he takes all this stuff and he has stuff in cases and, you know, whatever. He's got this huge space. Mm-hmm. And the occult museum that Lorraine Warren has, I think, is only, like, one room and there's, like, a few... like cabinets or whatever. Is it a basement?
I think so.
I feel like they have like a really long, like it was just an expansion that they put on their house and then they added.
Maybe.
Because I remember seeing it on some sort of ghost hunting show or something or some paranormal research show. And there's a lot of windows, I feel like, on one side. But I don't understand why you would ever want to do that. The speculation surrounding Annabelle and the things that supposedly... have happened to people who have mocked her and, you know, touched her and whatever. It just doesn't seem like something you want to screw around with. I don't understand why.
No, I think it's just rude.
And if he didn't have the show and this wasn't something that he did for a living, I would understand. But he's got all this other stuff. So my last one was season 1, episode 8. Called Lean In and Listen, and it was the first time that I tackled urban legends, and I did the Hookman and the Choking Doberman. And the Hookman legend is something that is very near and dear to my heart, because Why are you? You're gesturing. What are you? What are you just? Oh, you're doing. Hook. Oh, you're making a hook. I was like, what? So, oh my god. Okay. Obviously, I need lunch because I'm like wilting and fading fast. That legend was something that I heard. I couldn't even tell you how many times mm-hmm. around a campfire or just from friends. Right. You know, trying to freak you out at a sleepover or whatever. And I actually think that I remember a family member telling me something like that shortly before I went to my senior prom. And thinking to myself, oh, well, you know, I better be careful because, you know, like, I don't want to get stuck out in this car somewhere. And there was no possible way that I was going to go and park with this guy that I went with because he was like a friend of the family or whatever, and he was sort of weird, and he was just like, yeah, I'll go with you, because there was nobody that I wanted to go with at my high school, so I was like, well, whatever, you know, I'll go with a family friend or whatever, and he was a nice guy, he was just kind of weird, so there was no possible way that we were ever going to even get into a hook-handed man situation, it was just not going to happen, but very interesting, also that they use that as a tool to discourage teenagers from going and doing that, going to park and having, you know, illicit meetings or whatever in abandoned places, you know, and that was the whole point of that story, right. Was to kind of shy people away. And also, so cool that it was a Dear Abby column. Just so cool. Like, I read that and I was like, oh, yes, Dear Abby, bringing it.
Yeah,
it was fantastic. Yeah. It was a good one.
I love the way you talk about this stuff. You just get so excited.
It's
your eyes light up.
Well, the urban legend stuff, urban legends and folklore really go hand in hand. Sometimes folklore informs urban legends, and sometimes it's the other way around, but it's just something that I've always been really interested in. I've actually, for a long time now, been trying to get another podcast up and running called The Vanishing Hitchhiker, and it's basically just me talking about urban legends.
Oh, okay.
So I've been trying to do that, but of course, stressed out, no time.
Right. Well, don't you think you have a lot on your plate right now?
Yeah, you know, I think I do. But, you know, I mean, sometimes I might have an evening where I'm bored or whatever, and I'll just throw something together. Maybe it'll be a once a month thing, you know, where I can like just kind of sit down and detox and do some of that stuff, because I do find a lot of enjoyment in it. And I want to make sure that even though I'm busy doing other things, I still have time to sit down and do the things that I enjoy.
Good.
And relax me. So was that it? Did you have another one?
Well, actually, I like all these stories because I just love hearing about it all. But I find it fascinating, the Roanoke one.
Ah, the deer stones.
I think the guy with the stones, it was fake. But I just think that what happened to that whole mm-hmm. village, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I just find that interesting. Mm-hmm. It's like, what happened to the mines?
You know, yeah.
I just think there's more of a story that needs to be found mm-hmm. that just hasn't been found.
Yeah, I mean, in the time before GPS, it really makes you wonder if, you know, the lost colony couldn't be found because it was like over a hill and to the left a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they just never went over that hill and to the left a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and those people were there all along, but they just never, you know, they never crossed paths again.
Right.
And you're talking about wilderness that is just a huge expanse of wilderness that, if you lose somebody in, I mean, nothing, absolutely nothing, like barely a deer path
and
going through that. And so, but you know.
Fascinating all the same.
Yeah, really fascinating stuff. Yeah, it was kind of hard for me to select the stories that I especially liked because I don't like to play favorites. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, pretty much everything that we've reported on thus far has been really interesting.
Yeah.
There are a couple forthcoming that I'm really super interested in right now. One of them is safety coffins. And that idea that, you know, you might be buried alive mm-hmm. was a big deal way back when, and they really had no way to tell whether or not you were dead or alive. And sometimes, even if they pricked you with, like, a needle or something in the bottom of your foot, if you were, like, passed out or something for some other reason, from some other cause, you're not going to wake up, so you might be buried alive. So they started to create all of these elaborate safety coffins with, like, bells and, like, chutes and, like, you know, it was just insane. And actually, I want to say Duns Scotus was buried in a safety coffin and was buried alive. So myself and Mimi both graduated from Cardinal Stritch University. So this harkens back to Cardinal Stritch. Yeah, yeah. And it's pretty interesting.
Does Barb know this friend?
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. Barbie Spice. Yeah. Check
it out.
Shout out to Barb Spice. Woot woot. Yeah. So yeah, I mean that one, and there's another story about the Eldridge Horror. In the UK. Apparently a very haunted house involves some children, involves some paranormal professionals coming in and investigating. I believe they said that the property had like over 1,000 EVPs over a very short time. So should be very interesting. So those are two that I have on the horizon.
Yeah.
But I also want to talk about corpse wax a little bit.
Corpse wax.
Yeah, it's actually like some corpses develop it, and it's like a waxy substance. Yeah, it's pretty. It's kind of gross. It is gross.
Are we talking about that now?
No. Not right now. Today I'm talking about the four humors, and then the use of corpses as medicine. So corpse medicine, basically.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep. Entitled, "That's When the Cannibalism Started."
Okay.
Dot, dot, dot. Yeah.
Very good.
Sometimes I feel like I should have my iPad here with, like, the strings open in GarageBand and make, like, little, like...
That would be great.
Yeah.
Do you ever watch Bob's Burgers?
Yes.
Well... You could have
with Gene, with the little keyboard.
Yes.
The keytar, that's what it is. Yeah. Okay, so who's going first?
Doesn't matter. Go first.
You want me to go first? Well, I'm not really anxious. But I am excited about it, because it's very interesting. So, yeah, that's when the cannibalism started. You know, that cannibalism, that's when it started. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm,
so... Neat. Right? Yum yum. Some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Okay, so I feel like we do a lot of Silence of the Lambs references. Do we do that a lot? I feel like, I don't know, it comes up a lot. It's just, it's so, there are so many uses for like various quotes from that movie. It's universal.
Yeah.
It's got universal appeal and universal use. At one point in time, people believed that miasma, which was a poisonous gas that they thought was let off by open sewers and pits, was the cause of many diseases, many, many afflictions, and that the four humors governed the ideas surrounding personal health and well-being. There were also cure-alls composed of various familiar substances that might make the sufferer feel well again, but might not. In my neck of the woods, people actually carried small potatoes in their pockets to get rid of warts. That was a thing. It was like a folk legend or whatever, cure. People also took pebbles that they would find on the graves of pious men. So, you know, if you were a regular churchgoer and, you know, you helped out in the church and you were very active in your community, you were very, very much into, you know, helping your fellow man, and you passed away, you were considered a pious individual. So people would go to your grave and they would take small pebbles from the top of your grave, and they would take that pebble and they would put it under their tongue, and then that was supposed to cure rheumatism.
I don't think that works.
Goose fat and scorched linen were used to cure many afflictions of the skin, ranging from like generally like just dry skin to skin that was very itchy and scaly and rough. Now, that kind of makes a lot of sense because if you take oil, like oily fat, and you put it against something that is very dry, yeah, I mean, it's a lubricant. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it might help a little bit. I don't know. People would also stitch little Bible verses into the linings of their children's coat. And those were said to prevent against a wide range of afflictions and also create kind of an aura of protection around them. In Newfoundland, it protected you against fairies, fae attacks. You would, on Sunday, you would get the little pieces of paper with the Bible verses written on them, blessed by the priest in the church. And then you would take the little pieces of paper and sew them into the linings of your children's coats, and then they would have them all week until the next week.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep, when you would get them blessed again. Or potentially get new ones and put them in. I don't know. So, this sounds batshit crazy. But there are still people who believe that these old cures that were used in isolated communities still work, and there are people that still use them. For example, my grandmother still feels that butter on any burn is a better cure than, you know, any sort of burn cream that you can get on the market. And she'll just put a little bit of butter on it. She's like, there you go. That's better. And it's like, no, Nan. That's not going to work, dude. That's not going to do anything. And she's like, no, it's fine. My mother always told me that I should do this and whatever. But she thinks it helps. So, you know, it's the placebo effect, right. But whatever, I guess. So with all that said, you know, the fact that some people are still using these items to quote-unquote cure... there's going to be a lot of air quotes in this particular piece, but something tells me that we're no longer using ground up mummies to cure anything. I don't think we're doing that anymore, are we?
I would hope not.
So this was called corpse medicine, and it was absolutely a thing in the 16th and 17th centuries. You have like kind of a speculative... Like, really? Okay. So, there are four humors, and I feel as if it's important to address this before we move into actual corpse medicine, because Hippocrates' theory of the four humors informed a lot of people as far as corpse medicine is concerned. So, there are four. So, the first one is blood or sanguine. The second one is phlegm, the third one is yellow bile, and the fourth one is black bile. So these four humors, according to Hippocrates, or Hippocrates, whoever, you know, however you want to pronounce his name, governed a large majority of early quote-unquote medical practices. So let's take a peek at each individually. So this section, I called it This is Humorous. Because I'm just so punny. I'm so punny. It's so punny. Oh my God. Okay. So the four humors and their qualities. So let's talk a little bit about blood. So blood obviously is found in the veins and arteries. That seems pretty normal. It can also be referred to as sanguine, which is Latin to deal with blood or dealing with blood. Hippocrates believed that the liver was exclusively in charge of the blood-making process within the body, and that the amount of blood within a single individual could influence their complexion as well as their personality. Production of blood was linked to the seasons of spring and summer, and as the seasons got warmer, the increasing heat brought blood to the surface of the skin, producing sweat in an effort to cool off, likely why the blood humor is linked to heat and moisture. If you had an excess of blood, it meant that you were sanguine and your personality would be jovial or charismatic.
Okay. Yeah.
It could also mean that you were big into daydreaming and you were sociable towards others. So I would be more of a sanguine individual.
Okay.
Sanguine personalities often had red complexions, further leading physicians, quote-unquote, of the time to believe that their evaluation of sanguine individuals was correct. So, if you had too much blood, what do you think they did?
Sucked it out of you.
Well, it was basically the process of bleeding. So they would use like this little mechanical thing that you would press against somebody's skin, and you'd flip a switch, and there'd be razors in there that would flash. And then you would put their arm or whatever over a bowl, and you would bleed them until such a time that you thought that you had bled them enough, because there was no way for you to know
right.
that you'd bled them enough, except that, you know, maybe they might pass out. I don't know.
They used leeches, too, didn't
they? But they used leeches. They bled people. If you had too much blood, sometimes they would use cold, because the opposite of heat is cold. And so if you had too much blood, they would use like cold, like ice or whatever as well. So on a further note, please note that the word physician is always in quotation marks. Always. During this time, anybody could be a physician on a whim. There were quote unquote good physicians, but nobody really had a clue as to the inner workings of the human body. Anybody could wake up one morning and decide to start treating patients. And if that doesn't scare you, I don't know what will. So, moving right along.
Okay.
So let's talk a little bit about phlegm. Now, you've likely become familiar with this humor while hacking up a lung during cold and flu season. I know you have had bronchitis fairly mm-hmm. recently, Mimi, so yep. You probably met Mr.
Very
phlegm.
Used to it.
Uh-huh. So, way back when, phlegm was associated with winter and cold weather. So that makes sense, right? While it was cold and damp outside, people had a tendency to get sick. And, of course, the phlegm itself was considered the cause of the illness and not a byproduct.
Oh.
So they thought that you had too much phlegm. So the treatment would be to avoid cold foods and liquids. If you're sick, you don't really have to get up and go, which is likely why people were categorized as phlegmatic. And that meant that they were quiet and sluggish. Mm-hmm. The brain and lungs were said to have produced phlegm, which the lungs, right. Yep, okay, good on you. You got that one. The brain doesn't really have anything to do with that. Yeah. So again, I mean, guesswork, just large amounts of guesswork. As far as black bile is concerned, black bile just doesn't exist within the human body. It's not a thing. It's likely that clotted blood was mistaken for black bile, and then it was categorized as such.
Couldn't it have been thought about as diarrhea?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, not diarrhea. That would be brown. Unless you're eating a lot of, what is it? Or no, drinking a lot of Pepto-Bismol apparently makes your stool turn black.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a thing. But, yeah, no. I'm thinking that probably what happened was as they were bleeding people, they would bleed them and then they would, you know, leave the blood in a bowl. And eventually, as blood is left out in the air, it starts to turn color.
Right.
And it gets very dark and it can clot and whatever. So I think that they looked at that and they were like, oh, well, we're also expelling the body of black bile. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, I think that that's probably what it was. It was believed that black bile was produced by the gallbladder. And diseases of fever and despondency.
Oh.
It's kind of vague.
Okay.
this was later called melancholia, or melancholy, meaning sad. And then black bile is associated with the earth and the season of autumn. I have no idea why.
Okay.
But that's what they said. Yellow bile, if you've ever gone a while without eating to the point of being physically sick, you've likely met this humor. Yellow bile was associated with aggression and the element of fire. It makes total sense because vomiting stomach acid can be very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. As something that I have done in several times in the fairly recent past. And it's quite, yeah. Or if you have really bad indigestion or acid reflux, when that comes back, I mean, that is, woof, yeah, that's bad. So on the WordPress blog, there is a depiction of an 18th century woodcut that displays people who are phlegmatic, choleric, sanguine, and melancholic. And the faces are all different. So it's very interesting. I didn't print out the picture, But you can, I mean, you can Google it, and it's interesting because the, for example, the people who are sanguine or associated with the humor of blood, their cheeks are very round, their complexion is very red, their noses are kind of like pushed in, you know, a little bit, they're kind of puggish. Uh-huh. And these are the people that are jovial and charismatic.
Okay.
You know, those people that are sanguine. So it's very interesting. The person that's melancholic, that person is very droopy. It's very interesting how they depicted these people, and then they would look at a picture of somebody, and they'd look at the actual person and be like, oh, yeah, you're melancholic. Yeah, that's what you are. Because your face looks that way.
Right.
You know? Yeah, it's just crazy. When treatments for certain ailments fail to produce a desired result or a cure, new methods of treatment were explored. And here's where shit gets weird. So this section is called Dear Mummy. So now that we've familiarized ourselves with the four humors, let's get a little closer, look a little closer at the practice of corpse medicine. Now, corpse medicine is not about providing medicinal aid to corpses, because that would be silly. You know, here, Uncle Bob, take this cough syrup and bundle up before you catch cold. And he's dead. Like, why would you? That's silly. I wish I could say that it's not what it sounds like, but it's absolutely what it sounds like. And this one quacks like a duck. So, yeah. So, just imagine going to your chosen physician, quote-unquote physician, to get treated for a severe case of gout. It's likely that you'd be prescribed a small tincture of powder, and that powder would be, if you had a reputable physician, quote-unquote, would be the ground-up remains of an Egyptian mummy. Like, literally, like an Egyptian, like from a tomb in Egypt, like an Egyptian mummy. Seriously, a mummy, I'm not kidding.
Why would they even think that?
I don't know. Don't know the answer to that question. So you'd be given this powder, and then you could mix the powder with water or an alcohol if you could afford such a luxury. And then you'd drink it down, or you'd add just enough water to make a paste, and you'd rub it on the affected area. Okay. So people might even take it and bake it into bread or stir it into whatever they were eating, because it was just easier to consume it that way. Also, if you took it and you put it in bread, you might be able to stretch it a little bit further.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, people would get bruises and they'd, you know, take this powder, this ground up mummy powder, and they'd mix it with a little bit of water and make a paste, and they'd rub it on the bruise. Mm-hmm. And then after a little while, the bruise would go away. Well, because bruises go away.
Right.
You know, I mean, most bruises go away. Like, if you get bruises and they don't go away, that's bad.
Yeah, that's a problem.
But most bruises, you know, just your run-of-the-mill bruise, it goes away. So people thought that this was, you know, an advancement in what they knew about medical practice. So they would be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, my cousin put mummy powder paste on his bruise and it went away. And so I'm going to go and get, you know, it's kind of like in Mean Girls where that girl is like, I saw Regina George wearing army pants and flip-flops, so I bought army pants and flip-flops. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Oh, God.
Nobody else gets my... I go to this room, and I stand in there, and I teach for 4 hours, and I tell these kids trying to learn driver's ed, like, funny shit about Mean Girls, and they don't get any of my Mean Girls references, and it's so frustrating!
No.
It's really frustrating.
They don't get Mean Girls, and they don't get... What's that other one that's my husband's favorite?
They don't get Ghostbusters references, either. Like, the original Ghostbusters references, they don't get them.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It really is.
I don't know what they're missing.
Mm-hmm. I know. I know all about it.
Yeah.
So, okay, so they stir it into whatever they're eating. Mummies were stolen from their tombs. Irish burial sites were raided. And in an effort to provide a quote-unquote cure for what ailed you, some people even created the powder on their own to make a fast buck. So they would actually grind up, like, the animal bones and, like, maybe a little dirt to get the color just right. But for some people, the placebo effect is enough.
Yeah. Right.
So they were like, oh, yeah, I'm cured because I went to Dr. So-and-so and, you know, I got my mummy powder and now I feel so much better. So eventually, the world of corpse medicine began to expand to other human remains. Let's be honest, there aren't that many mummies in the world and there certainly wasn't enough supply for the demand. Right. Like, what do you do? So you've consumed all the mummies in the world and you still believe in corpse medicine and mummy powder. So where are you going to find, you know, like, it just, yeah. Gravediggers were employed by those willing to pay for corpses that had recently been buried. Now, when you went to see the quote-unquote doc for your gout treatment, you were likely prescribed fat from a human body. You'd be told to slather the fat onto the affected area and then wrap it. I really wish I was making this up. I wish I was making this shit up. I'm not making it up.
Gross.
Yes. I think this episode is going to need a disclaimer. So even the king himself, King Charles II, embraced corpse medicine as a way to treat himself. Daily he would take something called the King's Drops, which was a small tincture that he carried on his person at all times, consisting of ground human skull that was muddled in alcohol.
Ew.
And then he would take out a couple of drops and drop them on his tongue every day.
Oh, just a thought before I forget, because, you know, it goes in and out.
Yes.
There's a toll that people drink, put in whiskey, and they drink it in a bar somewhere, and I'm not sure where the bar is.
A toll.
Or something.
Nice.
Yeah, it's this guy's toll that fell off. And it's like 100, 200 years old already.
So it's a 200-year-old toll.
Yeah.
And they put it in their drinks?
We'll have to Google it later.
Ugh. Yeah. Okay. So, modern corpse medicine.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. So, at this point in time, perhaps the king could afford corpse medicine. But what about lowly peasants? Basically, they had to fend for themselves. At public executions, the crowds would gather as close to the front as possible on the off chance that they might be hit with a spurt of blood at a beheading, or they would dip handkerchiefs in the blood that pooled onto the scaffold.
Oh.
And they would use, yeah, they would use those.
Disease.
Right? So, just when you thought that there was no possible way to make beheading more gruesome, you have people who want to get sprayed by the blood shooting out of somebody's neck. I mean, it's just nuts. Some people would pay a small amount if they could for a cup of blood that they would then consume. Apparently, it was better and more effective when it was warm. For those who preferred to have their blood cooked, there's a recipe from a Franciscan apothecary in 1679 who described how to make it into a lovely marmalade.
Ew.
Those Franciscans,
blood,
man!
Is that where blood pudding comes from?
Well, I mean, it does have blood in it. But it's animal blood, and it's, you know, whatever. So it's not.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's animal blood. Come on. You're going to start freaking people out. They're going to be locked in their houses, hiding underneath their beds. So another reason why corpse medicine was so popular was because consuming the remains of another human being was said to be akin to absorbing that person's essence into yourself.
Right.
So if you consume the blood of a robust young man or of a virginal young woman, that blood was said to have been especially potent. So there was always a big crowd at those beheadings. So according to Beth A. Conklin, a cultural and medical anthropologist at Vanderbilt University who has studied and written about cannibalism in the Americas, even at corpse medicine's peak, two groups were demonized for related behaviors that were considered savage and cannibalistic. One was Catholics, whom Protestants condemned for their belief in transubstantiation, that is, that the bread and wine taken during Holy Communion were, through God's power, changed into the body and blood of Christ.
Right.
The other group was Native Americans. Negative stereotypes about them were justified by the suggestion that these groups practiced cannibalism. Conklin says it looks like sheer hypocrisy. People of the time knew that corpse medicine was made from human remains, but through some mental transubstantiation of their own, those consumers refused to see the cannibalistic implications of their own practices. Yeah. Conklin finds a distinct difference between European corpse medicine and the New World cannibalism that she studied. Quote, "The one thing that we know is that almost all non-Western cannibal practice is deeply social in the sense that the relationship between the eater and the one who is eaten matters. In the European practice, this was likely erased and made irrelevant. Human beings were reduced to simple biological matter, equivalent to any other kind of commodity medicine." So I know that corpse medicine sounds crazy, but it actually kind of, stay with me here, made sense. It kind of made sense. In the 16th and 17th centuries, they weren't even sure how blood was being circulated throughout the body, let alone what all of the organs in the body were responsible for. Back then, this form of medicinal treatment made sense because the cure was applied to the afflicted body part. So you have a headache, maybe rub some of this on your head. You have stomach upset, drink a bottle of this. Have rough skin, rub this on it. The cure and the affliction went hand in hand, and until we figured out a little bit more about the complicated machine that is the human body, this was all we had to go on. According to Leonardo da Vinci, we preserve our life with the death of others in a dead thing, insensate life remains, which, when it is reunited with the stomachs of the living, regains sensitive and intellectual life. So, seems legit, Leo.
I have to think about that.
Seems legit. Yeah. Cool. So that's corpse medicine.
Wow, mm-hmm. I'm not a prescriber.
And the four humors.
All right.
So what do we got?
Well, we are going to your neck of the woods. We're going up to Canada. We're going to Banff, which is in Alberta,
yep. Canada. Oh, I had some fantastic times in Banff.
Well, it sure was pretty, all the pictures I saw.
Yeah, it's super pretty. When I was in the Army Cadet Corps, we had to go on a 6-week course up in Banff, Alberta. So we actually had to stay on a base in that area. Oh, it was very, it's very pretty.
Wow.
We had a hell of a time up there, but it was very pretty. I can say that.
Was a good
time? No, not really. Oh, it was the it was like military training, so yeah. It was drill and, you know, pressing your uniforms and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it was kind of blah. Mm-hmm. More blah.
Well, built in 88 was the Fairmont Banff Springs Hotel, also known as Castle of the Rockies. It was built by CPR, or Canadian Pacific Railroad, the president, William Van Horn. Mm. But unfortunately, in 1926, there was a fire which destroyed the building, and then they remodeled it to be like a Scottish castle with turrets and towers and all that.
So, cool.
Okay. So, people from all over the world came to stay, and some never left.
Mm-hmm.
So we have King Edward VIII is one, Helen Keller, Queen Elizabeth II, Marilyn Monroe.
Mm.
Those are just a few.
Huh.
So most of the haunting tales come from workers at the hotel because the hotel management denies any hauntings. Mm. No hauntings here.
It's okay. Really interesting, isn't it? Like, some hotels are like, yeah, we're haunted as shit. And other hotels are like, no, there's nothing going on here.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? That's really interesting.
Well, here in this hotel, they have a room, room number 873 on the 8th floor, which is no longer there, but it used to be there, but they covered it up. Why did they cover it up?
Oh.
A young family was staying at the hotel, and in that room, a mom, a dad, and a daughter. Dad murdered mom and daughter.
Oh.
Then he committed suicide. According to staff and a few patrons, mother and daughter never left. People staying in the room would be woken up by loud shrieks. Ah!
I swear that if it was an actual shriek, I wouldn't laugh at it. I swear I wouldn't.
A few maids found bloody fingerprints on the mirror as I'm putting my fingers up in the bathroom. But unfortunately, they'd scrub and scrub, and it just wouldn't come off.
Huh.
And then eventually it would wear away, but they couldn't get it off right then and there. So, the management, because of all these problems, closed off the room and they walled it up. They put, what do they call that board up there? And it looks like just a wall now.
Oh, like Gyprock?
Yeah, something like that. So, then there was a man by the name of Sam McCauley. He died in the late 1970s, and he was a longtime bellman of the hotel. Everyone loved the Scotsman because he had a big Scottish brogue. He always said he would come back to haunt the hotel after he died. People made claims of the elevator doors opening and closing when no one's around, which I've had happen before, but okay. So, and lights would be on in places that there weren't even lights, but there would be light, like, in the hallway or something, and there were no lights there.
That's very interesting.
Also, he's been known to help people out. In one instance, there were two elderly women who could not get into their room, and they were waiting and waiting for the bellman to come up, and finally... Sam came up and opened the door and was very friendly and very helpful. And when they went down to remark to the person in charge, the manager, how wonderful he was, they were like, "We don't have anyone working here who's wearing, you know, a really old bellman's outfit and has an old Scottish accent." So they figured out it was Sam. So another ghost story around the hotel is that of a bartender who tries to get drunk people to leave the bar and go to bed. He apparently doesn't like way too drunk people. So, you know, old Joe will be sitting at the end of the bar, swigging his whiskey around, and a ghostly apparition comes up and says, "You know, you've had enough."
"You're disturbing my afterlife."
And also,
go to bed.
There's a headless man that roams around the hotel, and he plays the bagpipes. Now, how does a headless ghost or non-ghost
play the bagpipes? That's interesting.
So,
I mean, I'm trying to think, like, if you know, the esophagus, I suppose, would be left on the top, but I don't know.
Well, there's other orifices for this gas.
You know, that is the second reference to flatulence on this episode. We have also had a diarrhea reference. And, yeah.
I personally am not having issues with that, but I know people who are.
Oh, man.
Anywho. So there's also a room... 692 on the sixth floor, patrons have been scared out of. They've been asleep and something's grabbed the pillows away. They've been asleep. The room will get real cold when it's real warm, and then all of a sudden it gets cold. People have also been pushed off their bed, but nobody's there. Why this room wasn't closed off and the other one was, I have no idea. So one of the most famous stories is that of the Phantom Bride. It was the early 1930s when a young couple married in Banff and had their wedding reception at the hotel. The room that they were having their reception in was up on the second floor.
Oh, sure.
So the bride was walking up the staircase to her beloved, and unfortunately they had put candles on the stairway going up, and her dress caught on fire. And while she's trying to get it out, she falls down the stairs and she breaks her neck.
Ooh.
And it's very sad.
Wow. So, that's a very violent way to go. Oof.
It's just sad.
I'm very glad that we're having this, you know, relaying this very emotional story, and my fucking parrot is in the basement just having a conniption.
I could totally ignore the parrot. I don't even notice her until you said something.
She's making the microwave noise.
Oh, she's hungry?
Yep. She, no, it's not that she's hungry. It's that she's an asshole. I mean, basically, that's what it is. No. Okay. She's, yeah. She does only the annoying noises. Like, we've tried teaching her. The only cute thing that she really does is the Tarzan yell.
Oh, really?
That's the only cute thing that she does. The rest of it is like, I'm going to make the sound like the carbon monoxide alarm. What?
I haven't heard that yet.
Oh, really? Tarzan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's literally like, ah! Yeah.
It's cute.
But anyway, she's an asshole, so.
Oh. Well, back to the bride.
Ignore the asshole bird and focus on the bride.
Yeah. Back to the bride. So, over the years, people, staff, patrons, whoever, have reported seeing a ghostly bride dancing by herself in the ballroom. I think that's so sad.
Yeah.
You know, she was supposed to be dancing with her new husband, and there she is all alone.
Yeah.
People have seen her ghostly figure walking up the stairs as well. There are also people who have heard weird noises from the bridal suite when no one is in there.
Hmm. Wow.
Kind of sad, but I'd really like to meet Sam the Bellman.
Right? It seems like he'd be a pretty interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I think so.
So they literally had an interaction with this guy who opened their door for them.
Yeah.
Like, put a key in the door and opened the door for them. Wow. Yeah.
Well, they were elderly old ladies. But there's been other instances where he's helped people with their luggage and directions.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Like the elevator thing, that can happen anywhere.
Yeah, and you know, it's...
Well,
I mean, as far as the elevator is concerned, no. Like, I completely write that off as mechanical.
Yeah.
It's happened to me, it's happened to you. Like, it's just a thing that happens.
Right.
As far as the lights are concerned, I have heard stories about ghosts being able to produce certain light anomalies. So, I mean, that's not as far-fetched for me. And the heat kind of getting sucked out of the room, they say that when ghosts are trying to manifest themselves, they often take the energy away from... things that might be, you know, like electric heaters and, you know, video cameras, that sort of thing. You know, they'll suck all the energy from those in order to manifest themselves. So, I mean, that's really not so far-fetched either to me. But, yeah, the elevator door? Yeah, no, not so much. Yeah. No.
But that was a fun trip.
Yeah, yeah.
Up north here.
Uh-huh, yeah. Where people totally don't talk like that. In Canada? I don't understand what it is with people in Wisconsin thinking that Canadians sound like people from Minnesota. Yeah. Minnesota? Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. If you go up to, like, Eagle River or places, like, up by the UP, people sound like that, yeah. But
also in some places in Waukesha.
Yeah. Yep, I've definitely heard that one. The Tosa accent gets me.
Yeah.
People with there's a yoga studio in Tosa called Tosa Yoga. And saying it with the Tosan accent. Oh yeah. Everything is elongated.
Yeah. Yep.
All the, you know, like on Sunday morning, all the soccer moms are sitting at you know, one of the restaurants down in East Town Tosa.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, and then he kicked the ball there, didn't he? And it was a hell of a kick. Oh, she was kicking it down the field there, didn't you know? Yeah, I just can't. I don't know. And people are like, really? Like, they did a study. What was it? It was part of an NPR, like, special or something. And they were talking about how people from Minnesota have, you know, like, they were talking about cultural dialectics. And how different cultures have different dialects.
Right.
And how, if you're here in Wisconsin, the Wisconsin accent is going to sound very different from the Minnesotan accent. So they had, like, people in a mall or something. And they asked them to say, I left my coat in the car and now there's all this snow in the road. And because there are so many O's, people were just like, the people in Minnesota were really, like, having at it. Because the O's, you know, I left my coat in that car and now there's all this snow in the road. Like, just, you know, it's like 10 feet long when they're done saying it. And it's similar here in Wisconsin. You know, you'll hear that accent, the very elongated O's.
I've been told that every once in a while I have a southern twang to my voice, but I don't know where that
comes from. Yeah. The only time people tell me that I sound Irish is when I'm angry. Yeah, it's pretty funny. It's like, yeah, of course I'm angry. Or of course I sound Irish, I'm angry. not that Irish people sound angry, but you know, it's kind of funny. I don't know. It's like whenever I get frustrated or whenever I get angry, my accent really starts to come out and I start to cut words off to facilitate my need to swear and scream.
Okay.
Cool. So yeah, it's pretty
funny.
Somebody
will make you angry. I
want to
hear it.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Make her angry,
dear Debbie.
Almost heard it today with the computer.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I've gotten this new computer as an early Christmas present, and it's very nice. It's a Dell gaming computer, so it's supposedly good for podcasts. I don't know. So we'll have to wait and see how the audio is coming through this baby.
Okay.
But yeah, excited for a new piece of technology so that we can, you know, kind of better streamline the podcast process. And hopefully next time it won't take us like 35 minutes to get it to work the first time. So we'll have to wait and see. Or maybe I'll set it up ahead of time. There we go. So we're good for this week?
We are good.
All right. Sounds good. So we will see you guys. Actually, this is going to be the last episode until the new year. We're going to record the next episode on January the 11th, which means it will be available for download either the 14th or the 15th of January. We're kind of giving ourselves a little bit of downtime here for the holiday season. Just kind of, you know, wind down a little bit and get back into some things that I need to get into for work. And then we will be back.
Sounds good.
So I think we're good.
Looking forward to it.
Yep. So until next time, this is Janine signing off.
And this is Mimi Steven. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah.
Oh, yes. Whatever your tradition is.
And all the other ones I can't think of at the moment. Just have a really good New Year. Put 2017 behind you and
move on.
Look bravely towards 2018.
Charge onward. All right. And while you're... peace out. And as always, as you're charging onward, stay spooky.
St. James Infirmary. You know, I saw my baby there. Oh, she was stretched out on that long white table. So young, so sweet, so fair. Thank you.